Hello, and welcome to the Sport Horse Podcast. I'm Nicole Lakin.
And I'm Tim Warden, and we have a returning guest, Dr. Lindsay St. George, to discuss muscle function in ridden horses today.
Yeah, today's episode was a really fun one. We had Lindsay on a previous episode, but we also had the opportunity to meet her at Utrecht University this summer, and her research is super cool, has a lot of potential impact both, on really every piece of the puzzle when it comes to sport horses. So from riding and training to veterinary care, injury prevention, all these things. So I really enjoyed it. And you and I were just chatting before jumping on to record, Tim. It really got me thinking about a lot of things that I do as a rider and whether they actually make sense or not. And we also had a nice little, anecdotal conversation about where science meets horsemanship and how feeling comes into play with some of the stuff that her research has shown and how also her research can help you understand your feeling better. So really cool one. I hope you guys enjoy it.
So Lindsay is a research fellow at the University of Central Lancashire, where she completed her PhD in 2017. Her research examines equine and human biomechanics with a special interest in using surface electromyography to investigate how equine muscles facilitate movement. She is a 2021 Morris Animal Foundation Fellowship recipient and is working to evaluate the impact of equine lameness on movement and muscle activity with colleagues at Utrecht University and Delsis/LTAC Incorporated. She is involved in several other national and international equine research collaborations, as well as supervising postgraduate and student research. Hey, Lindsay, and welcome back to the Sport Horse Podcast.
Hi, guys.
So we previously had you on to discuss muscle activation patterns in an induced lameness model. Really enjoyed that discussion, but I'm a sport guy, I'm a performance guy, so I'm really, really pumped to have you on today to talk about some of the work you did looking at collecting data on muscle activation in ridden horses. So maybe to start, can you just talk about how easy it is to collect this data and sort of what that process is? Because I think for the majority of listeners, they won't even know that this is possible.
Yeah, so the basis of it is the exact same as what we talked about for the lameness work. In terms of collecting your EMG or your muscle activity data, we still need to remove all the hair over the superficial muscles of interest. And I guess nothing else is really different. You have to be very careful with making sure that your sensors are well adhered to the skin, especially depending on what you're measuring. If a horse starts sweating or things like that, then your adhesion can be compromised. So we need to be really careful about things like that. Consistently check the sensors and use some really good adhesive tape. Another thing to consider is that, of course, we can't measure muscle activity with these sensors under the saddle, unless someone comes up with some amazing new technology to do so. At the moment, it's not possible. And another thing is just keeping in mind where the rider's reins are, where the rider's hands and legs are going to be, just so that they're not kind of coming in contact with any of your sensors and knocking them off or kind of affecting the quality of your data that you're collecting. And then we almost always, or I have always, synchronously collected this muscle activity or EMG data with 3D motion capture. And unlike the lameness study, where we had the luxury of Utrecht University's Equine Hospital, where they've got a big hall with a permanent motion capture system, we actually have to take a portable motion capture system out to these riding arenas to collect our data. We use Qualisys cameras. They have a lot of kind of filtering. Active filtering is one of the kind of benefits that they have, which means you can collect data outside. But there are challenges, like weather is a challenge. We can't collect data in the rain, or it's very windy in the UK, so you don't want your cameras getting knocked over. So there are challenges, but it's very much possible to collect good quality data from ridden horses in these environments. And I think that's all that's really different.
And just really quickly, can you maybe talk about the specific muscles that you think should be measured and the ones that you actually can measure with EMG, and sort of, I guess, said differently, what muscles do you think are really going to inform what we learn about ridden horses moving forward, because they are easy to collect from and they are also the main drivers of equine locomotion?
Yeah, so with surface EMG, we're limited to the superficial muscles. I suppose you could argue that they all have their importance and they don't work in isolation. They work together. So what we've previously done is we've always tend to look at middle glute or superficial glute. There is a window where your middle gluteal is actually superficial. So you can measure that. That's a really important muscle of the hind limb. It's one of the most kind of powerful muscles for, you know, generating power. Biceps femoris, we tend to collect data from a lot. This is actually the biggest muscle of the equine hind limb. Again, a really important muscle for that power generation from your hind limb. You can collect data from some of the other muscles of the hind limb, like semitendinosus, semimembranosus. You're kind of getting in closer to where the tail is. So maybe that one's a bit more complicated depending on what you're measuring. Muscles of the forelimb, we look at triceps brachii a lot. That's a really important stabilizer of the elbow and shoulder joint. And then in terms of the neck, I haven't measured that much data from the neck. I've measured the splenius, but I know other researchers that have looked at some of the bigger neck muscles like the brachiocephalicus. So I think they all have an importance. I think we need to do more research to look into these. But from a training perspective, I think a lot of us focus on what the hind limb's doing. And I said you can't measure under the saddle, but that doesn't limit you from measuring more of the lumbar region of back muscles like longissimus dorsi, which of course is important. And you could also look at things like the rectus abdominis, but you don't really have gravity working on your favor with that muscle. So you would need to be very careful with the way you adhere your sensors. But it is possible to collect nice data from that muscle as well. So probably more research is needed to really answer your question and pinpoint what is the most important thing for us to be measuring maybe down the line in practice, because you don't want to be sticking 30 sensors on a horse if you're starting to kind of apply this in the real world. But I think we need to learn more before we can really hone in on what is the most important thing to measure for what discipline, for what horse, for what training stage, for what type of rider. There's so many different factors to consider.
That's really interesting. I'm hearing a call for somebody to invent a saddle pad that can facilitate EMG.
Yeah, that would be really good.
But I just want to take a step back just for those who aren't as familiar with the technologies that you're using. I know we talked about this in our previous episode, but you've mentioned both motion capture and EMG, and they're both used in a lot of different ways and to measure different things. But I'm wondering if you could give just sort of a brief description of each, like one sentence each, and then what the unique thing that they do together for the purposes of your research that you couldn't do with one or the other.
Yeah. Okay. So 3D motion capture is essentially a way of measuring the horse's movement. What we do is we place retroreflective or reflective markers over anatomical landmarks of interest. And that allows us, and we use a Qualisys motion capture system. Other systems are available, but they're essentially cameras that emit infrared light that bounces off your reflective markers, and it will kind of tell you the coordinates of those markers, which allows you to calculate the horse's movement or the dog's movement or the person's movement in 3D space. So you might have seen this type of technology used on film sets and things like that. Surface EMG or electromyography is a technique that we use to essentially measure muscle activity. There are kind of electrochemical changes that occur in the muscle when it contracts, and we place electrodes on the skin above the superficial muscles of interest. And these electrodes pick up those changes in electrical potential, and we can essentially measure muscle activation using these sensors. So we can look at when a contraction is occurring, muscle onset, offset, look at changes in the amplitude of that signal, things like that. And the reason that they work together is your EMG signal is great, and I don't want to say it means nothing without some knowledge of the movement, but you really do need kinematics, whether it's from inertial measurement units or 3D motion capture to understand how that muscle activity is actually relating to the movement of whatever species you're measuring. So it's a way of interpreting your muscle activity in relation to movement.
Lindsay's going to share with us some video to help break down what she's just explained, and we'll definitely share a link to that in the show notes. Another thing you can find in the show notes is a link to Lindsay's publication. So let's talk about that for a second. In the publication, you have these informative phase plots, which show when muscles are turning on or off during canter and submaximal jumping. Were there any findings that were unexpected or surprising here?
Yeah, I think I try to be kind of transparent in the data when I'm publishing these papers. So I think a lot of the time in these scientific papers, you end up illustrating and kind of presenting data that's almost group average. So it's averaged across your sample to try and look at these patterns. But that kind of negates your EMG signal, your more kind of raw, if you will, version of your EMG signal from an individual horse and an individual movement. So I always think it's really nice to show these illustrative individual EMG signals to show the quality of the data we're getting. So I think that's kind of what you're talking about here. And we try and also illustrate the footfall pattern underneath the EMG signal so that you can understand when that muscle's turning on in relation to when that limb is in contact with the ground or when it's in swing phase. I don't know if I'd say it's unexpected or surprising, but I would definitely find it fascinating that when you look at the jumping signals, the muscles are so quiet or the EMG signal is so small when the horse is in the suspension phase of the jumping effort. It's not that surprising because we do know from several other biomechanics studies that, you know, the mechanical energy that you need to jump is developed during the takeoff phase. And that determines the ballistic flight of the horse. So there have been some authors that describe the horse and rider as essentially projectiles once they're in the air. There's very little you can do to kind of change that flight arc that you've determined in your takeoff. And that would suggest, of course, that there's kind of no active muscular contribution in the suspension phase. But for me, it's really nice to have that objective signal that shows that it is, the signal does just go so quiet when the horse is in the air. So that's really cool to see. And I always also find it quite fascinating how these EMG signals really do kind of line up, if you will, or reflect the footfall pattern. So for example, as well in those jumping plots, you could see that the triceps, which is a forelimb muscle, comes on before the hindlimb muscles and it comes on right around that point or right before the point that forelimb's about to contact the ground. So nothing was really surprising or unexpected, but just really fascinating to at least have these objective illustrative signals of what's happening that we can't see with our human eyes alone.
Yeah. It's an interesting point. I think you talk to some riders and they'll say the kind of squeeze in the air or whatever. So they feel like it does give the horse a bit more. But yeah, as soon as the athletes leave the ground, like there's nothing the horse can push against to manipulate the body, right? So all you could really do is if the horse does activate one thing to get up higher in the air, something else has to go down, right? So it's...
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we haven't measured horses jumping, you know, meter 60, meter 40 at those heights to say that the muscle is for sure quiet the whole time. I know what you mean. There are those horses that maybe have these kind of individual hind limb or forelimb movements when they're up in the air. So yeah, for sure, those muscles might turn on in these very elite athletes that have their own kind of individual ways of making this work. But for the data that we collected, which was more your average horse over your average height, yeah, we weren't really seeing anything. So
yeah, this is like a totally selfish thing, but it would be so fascinating to try and see those horses when the width is a question that they're being asked and they have a sort of extra movement in the air. We call it, you know, like fighting for the back rail, basically.
Yeah, yeah.
Where you've kind of done all you can do off the ground and then the horse reaches or the hind end kind of swings up instead of just following the arc. So it'll be super fascinating.
Yeah, that throwing away the hind limb and those types of terms that people use. Yeah, it would be fascinating.
Someday.
Yeah. And I guess like circling back to what you said earlier, Lindsay, like I think that's when EMG becomes really exciting is when like you have these targeted questions, right? Sort of what Nicole was talking about, like in a certain situation, when a horse does a certain thing, I think that's when it gets very valuable. I think that's conversely some of the challenge with EMG, right? Is it like it gives you so much data because it's not just like the amplitude of the signal or the temporal aspect. It's also you can get into like, you know, different frequencies and stuff like, and then you start looking at all the relationships across the body and it, like for a single trial, like theoretically, you probably have probably like 40 different outcomes you can look at in each muscle. And then like, it just becomes like millions and billions, strong word, but millions of data points, right? So it's,
Yeah. And yeah, it's definitely kind of honing in on what you actually want to use the data for. Cause I think, I mean, at least throughout my PhD, I had one supervisor in particular who would always just say to me, just because you can measure something doesn't mean you should, because then you get faced with kind of the challenge that you just brought up. It's like you can take it in so many directions. So have a really clear reason for why you're collecting that data and what you want to get from it, which will help you not get completely overwhelmed by the analysis methods that are out there. And you know, starting to look at how the muscles, like I said before, yeah, you can look at muscles in isolation. And, you know, because we're kind of in the infancy of this field with horses, a lot of the times that's kind of what we tend to do. But moving forward, we need to start looking into muscle synergies and how the muscles actually work together to produce movement or whatever else you're looking at, that kind of thing.
You know, Nicole and I are primarily show jumping, so that's where our passion is. And I think that's why we're focusing in on that jumping study a little bit more. But between the horses that were getting up into the air in your study versus those that didn't tend to elevate their body so much, I know you saw some interesting things there. Can you touch on those findings?
Yeah. And I think actually this kind of follows on quite well from what we were just saying. So we measured jumping horses. We had a complete forelimb and hindlimb model for studying their movement. And we measured muscles from the forelimb and the hindlimb and the neck. But when I was doing this research, I really wanted it to be as relevant as possible to riders or people that might actually find this data interesting, not just scientists. So to hone in on what outcome measures we wanted from the movement data in particular, we actually did a questionnaire study where we asked equestrians, so show jumpers, trainers, riders, what do you look for in terms of movement quality from these show jumping horses? And also, we also asked about their training techniques. So we kind of found the most frequently reported movement quality or performance traits, and we almost redefined them as objective measures that we could calculate from our movement data. So those movement patterns or qualities were mainly things that we grouped broadly as things relating to impulsion. So the speed at which they approach the fence, their ability to use the hind limb to produce force at takeoff. Engagement was our other broad measure. And these were things like their ability to shorten the hind limb, bring it underneath themselves. And then the other broad kind of grouping was joint articulation. And this was more aesthetic traits, like their ability to tuck the forelimb over the fence or throw away the hind limb, like we were talking about before. Obviously, they're aesthetic. They do also have a function as well, these traits. So what we found in the horses that could jump the highest, if you will, or raise their center of mass the highest over the fence was that they actually displayed significantly shorter contractions in the glute muscles at takeoff. And this was significantly correlated with a faster approach speed. They shortened their hind limb more rapidly at takeoff, and they were also able to raise their center of mass in the vertical plane. They were able to raise their center of mass higher and faster at takeoff, and they had a shorter hind limb stance duration. So their hind limbs were in contact with the ground for a shorter amount of time at takeoff. What does that mean? basically, these horses were able to approach the fence faster and produce muscular force required to raise the center of mass more rapidly. And this was achieved by a more rapid gluteal contraction and compression of the hind limb over a shorter period of time. So they can more rapidly generate hind limb muscular force during jump takeoff, essentially. That was our main takeaway from this.
So a little bit, I guess, the challenge with the EMG is that like muscle is always connected to tendon. Mm-hmm. And you're only collecting the muscle. But I'd assume, like, especially as horses go faster and faster, like the tendon's going to play like a larger and larger role. Can you touch on that?
So I think that kind of goes back to their ability to shorten that hind limb faster. So they had more rapid hind limb shortening and a shorter gluteal contraction. The more rapidly and the more you compress that hind limb as a whole, we're talking, I believe we're talking tubercoxae to the hoof marker. That's the kind of what we're talking about in terms of hind limb shortening. The more you load those elastic soft tissues of the lower limb, the more rapidly you'll also release that. And that will contribute to kind of your force production and your ability to leave the ground. Did we measure that? No, but we know that when you shorten, particularly things like your hock joint, you can be pretty confident when you're kind of making these assumptions about the elastic soft tissue, the energy that's kind of stored in that, and its contribution to your kind of your jump takeoff.
So I think like what people like me are dying to know is how you think this tool can be used in the future. And I mean, again, selfishly, like, can it be used for talent identification or to help guide training decisions or maybe even, you know, as part of a pre-purchase exam? Are there potential fair uses of this tool in any of those applications?
I think talent identification is a really tough one because from just talking to equestrians and also doing this questionnaire study, a lot of what people are looking for, you can't measure. So, you know, the horse's personality, their willingness to work, things like that are, you know, a lot of these kind of physical things you can better through training, but, you know, the horses. So talent identification, honestly, I don't know. It might be a bit of a reach. Certainly not at this stage. I think we need to learn more about performance indicators, if you will. And also looking at those types of things long term. So if a horse displays a certain trait at, you know, a young age, we would need more longitudinal research to kind of actually show how that affects their performance as they go through their career, which at the moment, I don't believe we have very much data on that. There's certainly some studies, but I think you would need more to apply it in practice. In terms of training, the jumping study definitely suggested that things like power development, particularly in these gluteal muscles, the data supports kind of having that as a primary goal in your training plan for these jumping horses, you know, and that could be strength or power training outside of the arena. You know, how many show jumpers are going out and doing hill training, fast work, those types of things. Maybe that is something that more people want to think about implementing into their training plans. Of course, you can do this stuff in the arena with your gymnastics training or whatever it may be. Definitely our data suggests that. I also want to point out at this stage that because we had horses of different kind of calibers, if you will, for lack of a better word, we needed a jump height that every horse that we measured could jump. At 1 meter, you're not looking at a canter stride anymore. You are looking at a jumping effort. Anything below that is arguably an extended canter stride. So our horses were jumping 1 meter. This is submaximal for a lot of the talented horses that we measured. So what I'm talking about today might not be the case for some of these bigger fences like we talked about before, but also I don't really think you can argue that power development of the hind limb shouldn't be prioritized in a training program for these horses at any level. So, and then in terms of applications, I think from the canter work, we definitely found that there were differences in both function and muscle function in the leading and the trailing limbs of the fore and hind limb. And particularly in the jumping or dressage disciplines, you are trying to develop an athlete that exhibits kind of straightness, balance, symmetry of gait. And perhaps EMG could be applied in practice to maybe show whether a horse that prefers one canter lead or the other is related to kind of almost a muscular weakness in one limb when it functions as a leading or a trailing limb. Perhaps in future, we could use EMG to look at maybe muscle symmetry in animals or looking at what exercises are best for targeting certain muscles in certain horses. But I do think we're kind of a long way away from that at the moment.
That's really, really helpful and interesting. I can't help but think about, you know, again, Tim and I have a little bit of a blind spot, and we tend to think about high performance horses and hunters mm-hmm. and jumpers, and even more so show jumpers. So I apologize to our listeners for that. But I'm even thinking, you know, we talk a lot about the sort of cross section and the gaps between, you know, science and horsemanship. And so most educated riders can feel some of these asymmetries that you're talking about, but the ability of the EMG to pinpoint things a little bit more clearly, I think is really fascinating. And I'm curious, I don't know if you're like super familiar with the FES, but as a tool to target specific muscles, it's a tool obviously that needs to be used with somebody who understands biomechanics mm-hmm. and how the muscles should be firing, especially to increase strength and not cause harm. But I'm just curious, to me, that seems like a sort of logical next step and a way to fill in the gap between what you can feel and what you can do as a rider or as a trainer on the ground in the context of training and thinking about, you know, injury prevention and giving your horses the best chance they can to perform their job well.
Yeah, I know there's actually not very much. I am familiar with FES. I know that there's not a lot of scientific literature out there in relation sure. to the kind of its efficacy. Mm-hmm. But yeah, like you say, perhaps you could even use EMG in some of these scientific studies to show the impact of FES on muscle activity in a performance horse, but even in any horse that needs mm-hmm. it. And yeah, I think, like you say, we know, or most riders will know or be taught, you know, when you're coming up in riding, that you work the horse equally on both canter leads, for example. With this research we've done, we've actually shown, like, when your left forelimb is your leading forelimb versus when your right forelimb is your trailing forelimb, there are functional differences in what that limb is doing to create the canter as a gait, but there's also differences in the muscle activity between the left and the right side of the horse, just because you're on one lead of canter versus the other. So, you know, our data supports working the horse equally on both reins to develop a more balanced athlete, but also to do things like mitigate the risk of overuse injuries, because we know, for example, that the trailing forelimb, from previous studies, this is not one that I did, can experience up to 1.5 times the horse's body weight. That's a lot. And the leading forelimb doesn't experience quite as much. So again, you know, work the horse equally on both reins, develop a balanced athlete, but also try and kind of get away from these overuse injuries that you might see if you're constantly going around on one rein versus the other. And the same thing applies to jumping and those types of kind of asymmetrical movements, if you will.
Awesome. No, this has been a fascinating discussion, Lindsay. It's always great to chat with you. And yeah, like, I'm a big biomechanics guy, and like, yeah, I just kind of sit here and, you know, all these ideas start swirling around, and I think we need to clone you 10 times over so that we have enough power in the world, because like, just for our listeners, like, it's EMG is not an easy thing to collect in humans. It's incredibly difficult to collect in horses. So, like, my hat's off to Lindsay for doing this, especially when you get into like more intense exercise, like even in mm-hmm. humans, like just doing treadmill studies with EMG still like has its challenges and stuff. It's amplified 10 times in horses. So my hat's off to you, Lindsay. We appreciate the work you're doing. Looking forward to seeing what comes down the pipeline. Yeah, with that, we'll wrap it up. Thank you so much for taking the time to chat again. And we'll definitely keep bringing you back in the future for more episodes.
Thank you so much. And just going off what you said to end this on, I think down the line, if we can kind of develop some user-friendly tools for EMG that are cost-effective, easy to use in the field, and then we have the research to back it, it would be a really great tool for more people to start using. But it's kind of restricted to the research field right now, but definitely something to work to progress in future to get it in the hands of more people to use appropriately.
Awesome. That's a beautiful note to finish on, looking towards the future. All right. Thanks again, Lindsay.
Okay. Thank you.
So yeah, like I feel like I say this every episode, but I really loved that one. Yeah. Like as a biomechanist and like just how I think view sport, like so many of the publications in the textbooks, like just from human sport that you read, like when they go into like the muscle activation research and how that applies to sport, like I always find that fascinating. And it's still very much so in its infancy, but to hear about what Lindsay is currently doing with her work and just the potential applications of that, I think are just really, really cool to consider. One of the challenges is that it's still like quite difficult to do this type of research. So there are only a few people in the world doing it. But as these hardware and software systems can continue to evolve and get more user-friendly and start to address some of the issues that stopped it from being effective in horses in the past, we're going to see more and more of it. And it's going to be able to answer a lot of questions, both from like the veterinary side, but also I think from the performance side. If you want to know if that band that you're putting behind the horse's legs when you're flatting is actually engaging the hind end more, like you'll be able to answer that question. Or if you want to understand fatigue as you go through an exercise over and over, you'll be able to understand that. So it's really, really exciting with EMG, and we're getting a nice window into that. So really, really great. And yeah, we were just chatting a little bit about the need for research funding as well to support this. And I think that's one of the cool things about having the opportunity to host this podcast, right, Nicole, is like you get exposed to all this research. But I think after every episode, we usually stay on and we talk with the guests a little bit, and you just realize like how much we don't know and how it could have such a significant impact on how we manage horses if we were able to study this a little bit more.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, we talked with Lindsay after recording this episode a little bit about her future research and direction she wants to go, and making the type of work she's doing a little bit more accessible to more people and not just something that you can use in a research setting that you could potentially use in training or, you know, clinical practice. And so, you know, doing work like that, that she's doing today, and also what she's trying to do, it takes money. And unfortunately, I think most of the funding that goes to research in animals either goes into sort of the pet category or into, you know, race horses, where there's just a lot more different kind of environment, different regulation, and also just more money flowing. So, you know, it's really, there's so much that we can learn and that we still need to learn in the sport horse world. And so, yeah, it would be great to see some new funding resources focusing on all of these important areas that contribute to the health and the success of sport horses. And on that delightful note, that's a wrap for today's episode. You can find all of our show notes at www.sporthorsepodcast.com. As always, we'd love it if you would give us a review, share us with your friends, and be sure that you're following the show on whatever app you use to listen to podcasts. That will make sure that you never miss an episode. And here's to keeping your sport horse happy and healthy.